Welcome to the podcast Bipolar Boss. This podcast is all about serving up bipolar realness, real stories, real struggles, and real happiness. I am on a mission to change the conversation about mental illness, and that starts here with me and you. I want to hashtag end the stigma around mental health so that it is treated just like any other illness. So many of us don't have a voice or are not ready to use their voice. It can be exhausting, draining, and requires a lot of courage and bravery. So I want to be that voice for people. I want to create awareness and educate others so that people understand what it's like and what we go through on a daily basis. So I'd like to start out by talking about, I guess, when I was younger and what my experience was. And for some reason, when I went to the doctor, I always cried. I would just not be able to talk and I would just cry. So I always had to bring my mom to the doctor. It wasn't about until I was like 21. I went to the doctor and I was able to get through the whole session without crying. I actually was excited and celebrating because that was a huge accomplishment for me because I'd always had such problems with my health but was never able to communicate because I couldn't stop crying. To this day, I don't know why I cried when I went to the doctor. I don't know where it came from. It kind of freaks me out a little bit, but at the same time, I don't want to know. What counts is that I got over it. And so we had this one doctor and he retired and then this other lady took over and, you know, I just never really felt any connection with her. She was very impersonal and just really didn't offer me very much. She was always saying, "Oh my God, you look so stressed. How stressed you are. You know, I guess you're just a teenager and that's what teenagers do." And I was like, you know what? Yeah, teenagers have a lot of stressors and they're going through a lot, but there's something else going on and I think it should be a red flag. Like, I spent a lot of time in the health industry. I worked as a nutritionist and a personal trainer and I became these people's therapist. I saw them more than my own friends and family. And when a client would come to me crying and upset, I knew there was something wrong. I've actually had to have full sessions with people instead of training them, sit down because they're suicidal or because they're upset and crying about, you know, their weight or whatever their problem is. I've actually had to do that. And if I were a doctor, I would be alarmed if my patient was always crying, really upset and really stressed about something. Obviously, something's going on in that person's life. And there was for me. I couldn't communicate it. I didn't know how. And back then, we didn't know what half the stuff was. I didn't know what depression or anxiety was. Like, never even heard of it. We didn't even have Google. So, you know, I didn't know what was going on with myself. And I really needed that the adult figure, the doctor, to know, point something out or maybe point me in some sort of direction. You know, it only takes one little thing until then you find out something else and something else and something else. And so, you know, I had a lot of health problems growing up. I had tonsillitis. I eventually had to get my tonsils removed, but that left me sick year after year in the hospital, taking tons of antibiotics, which I think has something to do with my mental health today. I had chronic pain from the age of 14. I started going to a chiropractor, physio, spent so much time and money there. Just really always sick. Like, there was always something wrong with me. And now I know to this day, it's because of the bipolar. Now that I take medication, I do not get sick, knock on wood, but I really don't. And so, you know, going to this doctor, it wasn't helping. And I knew that I was feeling some sort of paranoia or anxiety. It was a lot of paranoia. I remember like one time for a whole year and a half, I was convinced that there was a bomb under my car. Every time I would go to drive, I looked under the car to see if the bomb was there. Clearly, there was no bomb. I was fine, but I was very convinced about that. And so this started happening around the ages of 15 or 16 and went into, you know, well into my early 20s, late 20s. Even still now I have paranoia. And so that's kind of how I started my own journey because no doctor was going to help me. So finally we had Wikipedia, that's where I went on and learned about anxiety. I first typed in paranoia and then I was like, yeah, that really sounds like me. And then I saw this word anxiety. First time I had ever seen the word. I clicked on it. You know how Wikipedia has the word where it's underlined in blue. I clicked on it went to that definition and I said, that also sounds like me. So that's when I knew, okay, I have anxiety, I have paranoia, and I have depression. I kind of knew what depression was, just from other family members having it and that kind of stuff. And it's, it was like, I think a little bit more talked about than anxiety. And so then I knew, okay, this is probably what's wrong with me, but I'm just going to ignore it because I don't know what else to do. I'm a freaking teenager. What am I supposed to do? So I ignored it. And, you know, it didn't take me until I would guess I was 21. I think I was 19 at the time. So I went to the University of Western. I got accepted there for the Media Information Technology program, which was really cool. I was super excited. Really excited to start university. It had been a dream of mine since I was a little girl to go to university. And so I was so excited. I, you know, got all this new stuff. I saved up for a whole year, $10,000 I saved, which only paid for my residence. And then I got, happened to get a loan for my OSAP, for my tuition. And then my parents helped me with it a little bit here and there. And so that's when I really started to realize what was wrong with me and things were starting to break down. Like I didn't have my resources anymore, which basically was my mom. My mom was in all of my activities too. That's what was keeping me healthy, because I danced so much and I played sports and I worked and I had friends. I kept myself busy. Even though I had really serious bouts of depression and serious anxiety, I was always busy. I was always having fun. And this, I think, played to the fact that I was able to stay alive and get through those suicidal moments. And I also had my mom. So she would take me to appointments. She would book my appointments. She would drive me to school because I hated the bus. I just hated it. It gave me so much anxiety. So she would drive me to school. Thankfully, when I got old enough to drive, she let me use her car to drive to work, and she would walk. My mom is the best. Thank you, Mom. And so when I got to Western, I didn't have any of that. And it just, everything was daunting. Everything was overwhelming. Just even printing a report, handing out resumes, it didn't matter what it was. I felt hopeless. And within that, I started to realize there might be something wrong with me, that I'm not functioning like everybody else. I'm getting super drunk and I can't get out of bed. All I want to do is drink. I'm throwing up. I'm binge eating. I'm starving myself. There was a week where I went the whole week and I ate 2 eggs the entire week. That's extremely, well, that's, you know, signs of eating disorder. And to this day, I still have that eating disorder. But all of that came out and it just got worse. And by the end of the year, I was locked in my bedroom. I wouldn't leave. I had gotten a house with four other girls, but they had went home for the summer. So I was in the house by myself, which made it even worse. And I locked myself in my house and in my bedroom by myself for 3 days. And that's when I said, you know what? I've had enough. I need to go home. I called my mom up. She came the next day, or very, very soon after I called her, and picked me up, and I went home. And you know, that's when I said, okay, I have to go see a psychologist. So I went to go see a psychologist, which was mostly for anxiety and my binge eating disorder. So I went there and she was awesome. For my first experience, okay, I skipped one thing. I did go see a psychiatrist at the University of Western, which was awful. Talked to me for 15 minutes, diagnosed me with social anxiety disorder, agoraphobia, which I do have, and generalized anxiety disorder, and gave me some meds. Took the meds, got so manic, because they're antidepressants and they can cause mania in bipolar people, broke my rib, was so blackout drunk, which I never blackout. I never blackout when I'm drunk, ever. Didn't remember a thing, and I still live with this rib problem to this day. So that was my experience with psychiatrists. However, I found this really nice, awesome, lovely lady in Kingston, Ontario, where we were living at the time. It's where I grew up there, and also in Napanee, Ontario. And she helped me a lot. She helped me with my anxiety. We did cognitive behavioral therapy, and she also helped me with my eating disorder. And so there I also joined a group, anxiety group, which is kind of cool. I'd never done that before, but to be in a room with a bunch of people that understand you and know what you're going through is pretty awesome. And so in that group, we would do lots of exercises and we would talk about our lives and, You know, there were some people that couldn't even leave their house. So in a way, I was kind of feeling grateful for my situation, the fact that, you know, I could still hold down a job and hold down friends. I knew that I could do this. I knew I could get better. So at that point, I stopped doing the therapy and I just continued on. But I didn't really get any better because I wasn't dealing with the problem, but I didn't know what the problem was. So I'm going to talk about that in my next segment. Stay tuned. So I spent many more years being sick and surviving. I would again call myself a high functioning bipolar person, but at this time I didn't know I was bipolar, so life was hard. If you're bipolar, you know what I mean, all the ups and downs, the suicidal moments, the crying in the bathroom, the not being able to go to work, to feeling so fucking hopeless that you can't even step outside your house, and even just having a shower is hard, and you just don't want to live. There's so many times where I just don't want to live anymore, but luckily for me, I'm always someone that picks myself back up. A lot of times it takes me talking to people. Luckily, I've had great people in my life in terms of, like, even though some of my partners were really shitty to me, they were always there for me. And without them, and without my parents, I don't know if I'd be here today. I always had my parents' house to go back to as a safe haven, thank God. And if you guys have that out there too, it's, you know, it really is a blessing. I would be dead, a drug addict, or something else if it weren't for my parents. And they just mean so much to me and what they've given. And they didn't even know what they were doing. They didn't even know that when I was coming home, it's because I was sick, broke, and couldn't take care of myself. It wasn't until I got diagnosed that they knew what was happening, but they'd been helping me for all these years, and I don't think they even really knew what they were doing, and, like, I really owe my life to them, and I really stress everybody to kind of get that good support system. It doesn't matter what it is, you need it. And so it took me a while to find some more doctors. I went to school for holistic nutrition at the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition. So I really got into natural health and exploring that. And I tried everything, you know, I tried all the supplements. I tried eating healthy, which I've always ate healthy. I still do. You know, I'm a vegan. So I've really tried everything and nothing was working. I went to a couple naturopaths, which they helped me immensely with my physical health. I was really struggling. I had ear infections all the time. Like, I couldn't sleep. I had major insomnia. And my ear infections made it even worse because they were so painful. It was hard for me to sleep. My tonsils were always fucked up. I had strep throat, which sucks. And had a lot of chronic pain, which wasn't going away. But these two naturopaths that I went to, you know, I spent a lot of money and a lot of time, but it was worth it. They did a lot for me and I was starting to feel better. But it didn't matter. No matter what I did, I was still fucking bipolar and I didn't even know it. And so I'm going along every year getting worse and worse and worse with no doctors. And, like, I don't know how many psychologists I've seen, probably 12 or 15, and I didn't find the right one. A lot of them didn't diagnose. A lot of psychologists don't want to diagnose because they don't want to get into that because it's so complicated. They just want to do the therapy. So I would go to these psychologists that either I set up through a work plan or through school, or I paid for myself. And, you know, the misconception in Canada is that all of our healthcare is free, and that is not true, especially for people with mental health. And so you do have to pay for good quality psychologists. You have to pay. And I didn't always have the money to do that. And the people that I did see, it was like, I didn't know why I was there, and I was getting frustrated because, like, I don't think this is helping, and I don't really think you understand what's going on with me, and you can't diagnose me anyways, so what's the point of coming here? And I had no help from medical doctors, just, like, family doctors, because none of them wanted to help me. And finally, you know, my breaking point was when I went to university, and I really am thankful for my university for catching this and helping me get it diagnosed. And again, when I went to university, I was struggling because university is really hard. For those of you who have went, they would know. And to balance your life in going to university and then having a relationship and, you know, DJing like I do, and having a job and trying to be friggin' awesome, you get exhausted. And I was struggling. Like, I always get really good marks. I've always been, you know, usually an 80, 90. I've gotten 100% on some of my exams in university. All of my HR classes, they're all in the 90s, high 90s. And then I have some, like math, which I'm really horrible at, and it's like 50. And sometimes, or 55 or 60. And sometimes that has to do with the fact that I can't concentrate in a huge classroom with a lot of people. I get serious anxiety and have ADHD. So university was really hard for me. And again, this is where I learned, and this is where I learned there is something wrong with me. And so I started seeing counselors there. And the counselor, she said, I think maybe you have ADHD. We get funded by the government to do like 6 ADHD tests a semester. So we get to pick these students that need it, and we pay for it because it's well over $1,000 for one of these assessments. Again, something that we have to pay for. So they paid for it for me, thank God. It was a very in-depth assessment. It was almost like 8 hours, and we did a lot of different exercises. He interviewed me quite a few times, and I talk a lot more about this in my book because I find it pretty interesting. And I actually wrote Robin, the psychologist, I wrote him a letter, and I put that letter in my book because I think it's cool for people to see, and to see how much I had to basically expose my whole life just to get help. And so he diagnosed me with ADHD, but then he said, you know, you also have bipolar disorder. So this started this whole trickle into the system and going from doctor to doctor. And I will admit, I actually lied to the one doctor I was seeing, and I told him, he was like, you know, if you were crawled up in a ball and crying, then I would definitely say you're bipolar, but I really only see that happy side of you. And I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't do that. Meanwhile, I've done that a million freaking times. If you're bipolar, you know how often you end up in the closet crying your fucking eyes out, or, you know, crying in the bathtub, or, you know, wanting to kill yourself. That's not abnormal. But I lied and I said, oh, I've never felt that. I've never done that, because I was scared out of my mind. I didn't want to be diagnosed, okay? I really didn't. I was in the denial phase. And then hit rock bottom. I've hit rock bottom several times before, but this time it was different. Like, this time I was done. I said, if you don't help me, if no one's going to help me, I am done. I don't want to live on this earth anymore. This is stupid. Why should I have to live like this? Why should I have to go through this? I shouldn't. And so that's why, you know, I think sometimes people do commit suicide, is because they're just done. I've been there. I know how it feels. And thank God, you know, for my medical doctor who diagnosed me, gave me, he took 50 minutes. That was it. That's all it took to figure out what was going on with me. And I know at that point I had an idea because some other doctors had mentioned it too. So I mentioned it to him, but he said, gave me medicine. I went on the meds. I've been on those same meds, Seroquel, for the last almost 4 years this year, and they've worked for me. You know, part of the reason why I think they worked is because I stuck to it. I'm a really good student. I did exactly what my doctor, my psychologist told me to do. I cut out everybody bad in my life. I stuck to a schedule of going to bed early, eating healthy, exercising. I did everything I was told to do, and that's why I got better, because I was so determined to get better and I wasn't going to give up. And I also had the support now of the doctors backing me up. They were my team. I could call my psychologist when I needed to. She was always there for me. I could go see my doctor whenever. I went once a week to see him at the beginning for the first year, you know, to make sure everything was okay. And so I caught a break. And you know, if you guys do read my book, I talk way more about this. So I don't want to give too many details, because all the details are in there. And I would really recommend, once my book does come out, reading it and finding out more about my story, because it is super interesting. And I think it would help a lot of people. And my advice to you is just keep searching for the right doctor. There's a lot of doctors out there. There's a lot of shitty ones. There's a lot of great ones. But you have to filter through, and you have to find the one that works for you. So if you're not happy, you know, with the doctor, then just go see someone else. I had to go through doctor, through doctor, through doctor, and some of them were good. I just knew they weren't the right one. And don't stop, but really be a champion for yourself. Educate the heck out of yourself on every mental illness there is. So when you go in to see a psychiatrist, especially, they're going to be throwing words at you and talking all this game and everything. You're going to know what they're talking about. And then you have leverage, right? It's all about negotiating. This sounds awful, really, because it shouldn't be about that. It shouldn't be about, you shouldn't have to negotiate a mental illness, but that's how twisted and messed up our mental health is. And it may be different in every province, but you know, in Saskatchewan, it was really bad. And I had to negotiate a little bit and to say, and to use my power, my leverage and my knowledge and say, you know what, I don't think that's right, because this is what I know and this is what I've read and I've done a lot of research, and I'm sorry, but I don't agree with you. And when a doctor hears that, there's really not much else they can do, right? Because they're there to guide you. You know, if you're suicidal, that's different, because they may, you know, admit you into the hospital, but they can't really say much. And you're probably right, because half the time you're going to know more than the doctor will. And so don't be afraid to speak up, and don't be afraid to ask questions. You're not going to learn anything if you don't ask. Ask why that medication? Why do you say that? Why would you assume that? Well, you didn't ask me this. What about that? So you can't just sit back and expect the doctors to do it for you. That goes for any mental health problem or any physical problem out there. Same with cancer. A lot of people don't get diagnosed soon enough. But it's because that person, or there's someone in their family, asked questions. And so I would say that's the biggest lesson learned for me, and something I can give to all of you guys, is to ask questions and to pave your own pathway through your mental health. It's not up to anybody else. It's up to you. You decide the doctors you want to see. You decide who's going to help you and who's going to be on your side. Nobody else does. If you're not comfortable, back out, okay? But I do highly suggest getting a psychologist, a psychiatrist, if you can find a good one, and a medical doctor, so just a family doctor, and always having those people on your side. Because when you feel down and when you feel suicidal, that's where you go. And you call them if you need to, or you book an appointment, because there's no sense in being alone during that time. And the doctor will give you advice and they'll steer you in the right direction. So they are very useful. You need to have them on your team. You just need to find the right ones. And so I hope today that you know, that you've kind of learned a few things and seen how difficult it is just to get a diagnosis. I mean, guys, it took me 12 years. And the thing about bipolar is that every year it gets worse. It your health slowly deteriorates year after year. So it's not something that should be left. I really want to advocate for early detection, you know, with my advocacy and everything that I'm doing and some plans that I have in the future. And one of those things is early detection, because I truly believe if I was helped earlier, I wouldn't be like I am today. I would have never gotten, my illness would never have gotten as worse as it did. So I say, let's watch out for people. Ask questions. If you have a child that you're worried about, look into it. Don't ignore it. Okay? When it comes to the actual tools that were used to diagnose me, it wasn't the DSM. It wasn't the book that psychiatrists used to, you know, pick an illness. They didn't just, you know, look in the book and say, hey, I think this sounds like you. Because I really feel like that's what, when I saw a psychiatrist, that's what they were doing. It was just kind of like a shot in the dark, or let's just close our eyes and see which one our finger lands on, because it was just so far off and it just wasn't really what was going on. Like, they didn't ask enough questions, and I really, you know, it just frustrates me so much. I just don't understand. If you're in this profession, you know, why not care a little bit more about it, and why not figure out exactly what's going on with this person? Like, for me, I would be so curious and interested in this person and to really want to know what's wrong with them. I wouldn't want to give someone the wrong illness. Like, for example, the psychiatrist, I said, the one minute she's saying, well, I can't go against your human rights and give you the wrong diagnosis, but then the next minute she's telling me that I'm too pretty to have a mental illness. Like, what the fuck? That's not cool. That's not how we should be training our psychiatrists. You know, and these two, this husband and wife that I saw, they actually were brought to Canada to train psychiatrists. So that's our future, people, and that is unacceptable. And so, you know, all that my doctor used was some simple conversation. you know, that kind of thing where you just talk back and forth and you really listen to your patient. And then he gave me a questionnaire, and it was just several questions. So I've actually filled one out similar to that before, but this one was a little bit more in depth. And then he kind of, you know, my answers were almost 100% to these questionnaires. And from talking to me, I think he already had an idea, and from other doctors previously telling me I'm bipolar. So then once he had kind of looked over the questionnaires, you know, he said, okay, yeah, I definitely see the correlation here. And that's when he put me on the meds. And then after that, I said, okay, well, I need to see a psychologist still to get therapy. And I did. I paid for it. It's $160 a session. I went every week, sometimes twice a week. So it was expensive, but, you know, it was something that I needed. So I had to budget for it. And she took about 3 months to diagnose me. It wasn't just, hey, how you doing? You're bipolar. Hey, how you doing? You're depressed, or you have adjustment disorder. Like, you know, it was more of, let's talk, let's help you, and let's figure out exactly what's going on. And at the end of it, I asked her, you know, did you look at this illness and did you look at that? And she said, yeah, I did. I looked at borderline personality disorder, but there's so many of the things that you don't have. And so by her talking to me, she was able to figure that out. But just talking to someone for 45 minutes, which psychiatrists are instructed to do, there's no way you would have found that out. So you have to go see someone that's willing to take the time to figure out the diagnosis, okay? And so that's basically what was used for me. And I did go to the psychologist because the medical doctor, you know, he saw in my face that I needed help. So he helped me. But the psychologist, that's what they do. So they can specialize in it a little bit more. And then once I got confirmed that diagnosis with her, then I knew, okay, this is 100% what I'm dealing with, and now all I have to do is deal with it. And that's what I did. And so when you're looking, if you're not diagnosed yet, or you're not, if you have been diagnosed and you're not really sure if it's the right diagnosis for you, don't give up. Just really try to find what it is that's going on with you and find the right doctor who's willing to take that time and discuss options with you. At the end of the day, I want everyone to be a champion for your life, because nobody else will. I always had support, but at the end of the day, I was left with my own devices, and I was left to take care of myself, because everybody has their own problems, really, quite frankly, and they can only be there for you. They can't push you to do something. They can't do it for you. Do you understand what I mean? They can be there for you, but it's just like relying on someone for happiness. It just doesn't work. Relying on someone to do the work for you to get better doesn't work. The key is hard work, and I really mean that. And if you don't want to work at your illness, you're just going to stay where you are, and that's what you need to accept. But if you want to be better and you want to get to the other side, then you need to work hard, and you need to be determined and ambitious, and look at that at getting healthy as a game. And that's where you have to be, because that's where when we get happy, and that's where we have a life. Yes, I still feel symptoms. I still go through my same regular episodes that I have every year, but now I can function like a real human being. And, you know, I get to enjoy things, and it just makes me so happy that I know that I've worked hard for this, and that I can enjoy life, and I can enjoy hanging out with my partner, and I don't have to be depressed and anxious and all the time, you know. And then when I do have those times, I still appreciate that, because I appreciate who I am in my illness. And that's what you guys need to do. You know, my trademark saying is give in, get better, but never give up. So thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. Once again, I am working on my book. All of this stuff is going to be in my book in greater detail. I'm hoping to have it done. Well, no, it's going to be done this year. And then I just need to get it published. And so please follow me on Instagram if you have it. My handle is MissBliss199, where I bear all. I tell my story. I really share a lot of my successes with everybody, so in the hopes that, you know, you can be successful too. And so thank you for listening. I hope you learned something today. If you have any questions about anything I said today, please reach out to me on Instagram and send me a private message. I try to answer every single message that I get. I love all of your feedback, and I just want to keep doing this and sharing my voice and spreading awareness. So thank you so much for listening. I'll have another podcast up soon. I'll tell you no matter.